You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, a look at possibly the most complicated and potentially maddening things most of us do on a regular basis. What would you say that is? It's driving. Driving, you know, it starts out as a mundane activity. You get in your car, you turn the key on, you back out of the driveway, slowly hit the road. But then what happens, right? You find drivers that don't give a darn about the rules, people who cut you off, road signs that don't make sense, road rage. Find all of this. You name it. I'm sure we can put a lot more in there, and we will this hour because we're going to be talking about driving. What kind of driver are you? What drives you crazy on the road? My next guest has gathered a lot of this research about driving habits into his new book. Let me introduce him. Tom Vanderbilt writes about design and technology for Wired and Slate and the New York Times. His new book is called Traffic, Why We Drive the Way We Do and What It Says About Us. He joins us from Georgia Public Broadcasting. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be here.
This is a very thick book. You've chronicled everything we ever do on the road.
It could be five times as large.
It is amazing how many things people do while they're driving, isn't it? And the things that they do.
Yeah, I mean, driving alone is complicated enough, but it's a little mind-boggling that we're now throwing things like, you know, texting and cell phones into the mix. And this is why, in some ways, I try to drive as little as possible because of the things I've seen other people doing. But it's easier to write about traffic than to sit in it, basically.
I have to admit that one of the things I hate most when I drive to see, I mean, I think this is like, is what's called the late merger. You start out with the late merger. I have to admit, in all honesty, I've tried it a couple of times and I felt terrible about it when I've been done. Tell us about the late merger.
Well, you know, I used to be you. I was born in the Midwest. I'm a polite guy. There's a bottleneck coming. There's two lanes going to one. I would stay in that long queue, and I didn't want to be that person going all the way to the front. And one day I was a little bit pressed for time, and I did it and felt sort of guilty about it and tried to look for reasons why I did what I do or maybe why there even were late and early mergers. And what I found, though, when I looked into some of the research on this is that when engineers have set up special systems that sort of eliminated the entire concept of a late and early merge and had people go to that merge point and then go one-on-one, that what they call throughput through the whole bottleneck was actually faster. And so, you know, there's just this thing going on that what we see through the windshield and kind of our notions of polite and impolite don't necessarily equal out to what's actually happening in the whole system.
So you're saying that it's actually better for the whole system to be a late merger?
If we get rid of that entire concept and you know, everyone used, I mean, that's spare road capacity there. Yeah. And it also creates, you know, sort of a longer queue. If everyone jumps over early, and that queue sometimes goes back even past the signs warning that there's a merge coming up. And that's, on the highway, that's very dangerous to ask people to stop unexpectedly. So yeah. I'm not saying the late mergers were acting altruistically.
Right.
But, you know, if we get the message out there, I think we could sort of change the entire behavior.
But so many things on the road I put into the category of the rules are made for you, but not for me. And you're a sucker for paying attention to them. And that would be a late merger would fall into that one. But there are a whole bunch of other things like that, you know, left-hand turns, that sort of thing.
Well, I think no issue is more heated in American driving culture than the left lane is for passing. And, I mean, we often find people sort of sitting in the left lane here. But this raises sort of this fundamental question that you'll find people driving fast in the left lane who come upon someone going the speed limit and they'll say, hey, you know, you're violating the law by not getting over for passing traffic. And this is someone going, you know, 15 miles over the speed limit, which technically is the law. So you're finding these sort of laws and beliefs and norms all kind of coming into conflict, and multiply this times 1,000 and times 75 miles an hour. And you could see how complex the whole thing really is.
Yeah, because I think we all do not assume that 15 miles an hour over the speed limit is really speeding, because so many people are doing it these days. You know,
it's a funny thing why some things we adhere more closely to and other. I mean, we're sort of rigid about stoplights, and, you know, the middle of the night you pull up to a stoplight and you don't necessarily go through it if no one else is coming, and you don't violate that norm so much as you violate the norm of speed. But in part that's just because we're quite overconfident on the road, and we aren't even aware, I would suggest, of things like stopping distance, because we generally don't have to do things like stop in an emergency. We lose the sense of what our vehicle is actually capable of.
Is our culture different than others around the world in how we drive?
Well, totally. I mean, and some of it is just, you know, sort of the density. I mean, a place like Delhi and the vehicle mix. I mean, there are 48 different modes of travel on the streets of Delhi. And then throw into that something like a cow. And cows, you know, famously roam the streets, and they'll sit on the traffic islands. They actually prefer to sit on the traffic islands because they're sort of warm, and the passing vehicles keep the flies away, I was told by and you know, and Delhi's top traffic cop told me, you know, this is, it's dangerous, yes, but it's also traffic calming because, right, you know, it's novelty, and right, no one wants to hit a cow.
Right. Talking with Tom Vanderbilt, author of Traffic, Why We Drive the Way We Do and What It Says About Us. You know, a lot of times we're very quick to judge people, and as I say, sometimes we then do these things ourselves. And sometimes one great example of this is I hate rubbernecking. I hate people who slow down to see a tire being changed, you know, and it could be in the other direction. Yet when I'm in that line that gets to that spot, I say to myself, if I had to slow down, that person behind me is going to have to slow down.
Yes, I mean, this is, you know, exactly what I mean, Thomas Schelling wrote about this, Nobel Prize winner. I mean, traffic fascinates him. And, you know, you multiply that 10 seconds that each person takes by that line of 100 vehicles, and it adds up to a lot of time. And if we could somehow agree beforehand not to take that look. And they've tried to do things like set up screens that block the crashes, but sometimes people just sort of look at the screens themselves, and those are sort of interesting. And, you know,
yeah, let's go to the phones. Lots of folks want to talk about driving. Paul in McLean, Virginia. Hi.
Hi, Ira.
Hi there.
Hey, listen, when I come to a traffic stop, a red light, I pull up close to the car in front of me, about 2-3 inches from them. And I notice a lot of people leave 10-20 feet. And I think that's impolite to the cars behind, because if everyone pulled up close, you could probably move sometimes into another lane. And I wonder, you know, why do they do this and what can be done about it?
You don't think that's an aggressive thing to do, to pull up to 2 inches behind somebody?
I think it would be aggressive only if I hit them, but I don't hit them.
Okay, Tom, what do you think?
Well, I mean, yeah, he's right. That is wasted capacity. And those protected green phases, as they're called, you know, are in short supply time-wise, and, you know, often you find yourself sitting through three of those things. So I don't really recommend tailgating in general, but I think tailgating when stopped at red lights would be okay.
Why don't we see more timed lights, you know, 30 mile an hour? Sometimes I know driving, if you time the light just right, you can go straight through all these greens. But then it sort of seems, wow, someone just messed the whole thing up on one block.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it just could be bad engineering. But, you know, in Los Angeles, they're really good at this. They've been working on this for decades. They've had traffic for decades, obviously. But there is this fundamental problem of, you know, on a grid system, there are a lot of other cars going kind of intersecting that traffic, also asking the same question, why am I not getting that green wave? And you can sort of work it out mathematically, I've been told. But, you know, sometimes there's just a saturation problem where there's just too many cars trying to use one intersection, and it breaks down.
What do you think about these new, what in the Northeast are called the Easy Pass, these, you know, these electronic metering systems for cars that you don't have to go through the toll booth anymore. You just zip right through there. Has that helped a lot? Yeah.
Well, I think so. I mean, because that's the classic bottleneck is the toll plaza. And I'm sort of shocked in New York how many people actually don't use Easy Pass. And I'm sort of definitely one of those smug Easy Pass users that whisks by. Although sometimes, you know, you're just speeding up entry to another bottleneck. You're kind of, there's something up ahead. But that whole thing is sort of called ITS, Intelligent Transportation Systems, just using technology, computers, et cetera, sensors to find ways to manage the flow better.
You know, there's even talk that they may build these things sort of into the cars now, into the future cars. So that the people will know where you are any time of the day.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing that as well. And, well, the systems have already emerged for things like adaptive cruise control, which can sort of measure exactly how far away the car is. And sort of, and studies of simulations have shown that if everyone had that, the highway would actually flow sort of better. Because as individual drivers, we make a lot of choices about speed and varying speeds and lane changes. And if we could sort of achieve a more, you know, homogeneous flow. But the best thing would be definitely to take the human away from the wheel, at least in the highway environment.
You think that's possible? I mean, to make automatic cars that drive themselves?
Well, in that kind of very simple environment. But, you know, DARPA, the Defense Agency's research arm, has been doing this autonomous vehicle race a couple times. And the last one they did was an urban challenge. And teams of very clever people from the top universities worked for years with a lot of money spent to create these autonomous vehicles that could drive themselves in a city environment. And the end of all this, they basically got cars that drove sort of slowly and crashed into each other and would have basically gone haywire if there were things like pedestrians present. I mean, so we're getting there, but it would be a long way before something like that.
Let's go to Elliot in Berkeley. Hi, Elliot.
Hello. Quick question that you could answer later. Does IQ and driving skill match? But main question, zipper merge seems to be the solution to forced merges. Is there a way to teach and enforce zipper merges to speed traffic?
Zipper merge means alternating left and right cars?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we? That's a good question, Tom.
Well, every situation is different. So, even with the late merge I'm recommending, when traffic is flowing lightly, there's no need for that sort of last minute merge. It would really work better if everyone merged well ahead of the merge point. So traffic, it always behaves differently, and applying the wrong medicine in the wrong place can sort of be worse than the cure.
Let's go through some of these interesting observations you have in your book. Let's talk about a few of them. For example, more people are killed legally crossing in a crosswalk than jaywalking. Wow.
That was in New York City, and it kind of fascinated me that more people are killed in the crosswalk when they have the signal than when they don't. So, there's just something about cars are unfortunately given the green light to move ahead at the same time pedestrians are given the walk signal. And turning cars basically often, they're not anticipating the pedestrians. They're focused more on the green light, that maybe the roof pillar of the car is obstructing visibility. Maybe they're on their cell phone. but this is, the classic Ratso Rizzo problem from the film Midnight Cowboy. Hey,
sure.
I'm walking here. This is something every New Yorker has to deal with every day.
Don't make any eye contact. That's what we do here in New York. If I don't see you, then I don't get hit. And children, you also observe the children at play signs. Those signs do not reduce speeds or accidents. I guess that's sort of like the baby on board thing.
Yeah, and there's this great big book called the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, which is the engineering Bible. And if you look in there, it's sort of – they basically recommend not to use it because it just hasn't really been shown to produce the effects. And usually it's sort of beleaguered residents who are trying to get people to slow down in neighborhoods who put these things up. And, you can try, but getting drivers to slow down is just one of these fundamental – problems.
Talking with Tom Vanderbilt, author of Traffic, Why We Drive the Way We Do and What It Says About Us on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Do speed bumps work? I mean, people just go zooming and banging up on the speed bumps, but don't slow down.
I mean, you have people, suing the city for ruining their suspension. There's that problem. But then there's some evidence that they speed up in between the speed bumps, so you might be achieving a success in one place, but then just swapping it out for an increased risk in the other place. So there's kind of a whole new school of what's called sort of psychological traffic calming that, maybe instead of speed bumps, maybe the road should be narrower to begin with, or maybe even removing that white divider line between the lanes, and it sort of confuses drivers a little bit, makes them slow down.
Mm.
And studies in England actually showed that they drove further apart when the lines weren't there than when the line was there. I mean, the line, in a way, sort of makes you stop thinking for yourself.
What about speed traps? Do the people pay attention to those? Or those phony cops they put up sometimes on the road?
When they see them, I suppose, although a good speed trap, you don't speed. But, I think there's a reason those are always posted at the entrance to small towns, and maybe they're trying to raise money for the town. But there is this problem, when you're driving for a long time at a certain speed, something called speed adaptation happens, and it takes you longer to realize when you're trying to slow down. It takes you longer to get to that speed you want. It's sort of been called the treadmill effect. When you're on the treadmill at the gym and you're running, and then you press stop, and the room sort of goes backwards for a minute. The neurons are in your brain are adjusting to the new speed, but there's still sort of a forward motion happening there. So.
You also write that men hunk more at women and men and women hunk more at women than at men.
Well, this is, the stoplight is a great place outside of the lab for applied psychology research. And you can, the light turns green. You wait to see what that second car does when the first car doesn't move. And there's all sorts of really curious patterns that emerge. And yes, men do honk more. When you have a convertible, that people honk less. There's a theory that they're less anonymous and they feel less protected. And people honk more at novice drivers. More expensive cars honk more at less expensive cars. I mean, these studies have been done in a kind of a fascinating variety of permutations.
Right. And one last question about drunk driving. Do we know when we're drunk when we drive? Can we recognize other drivers who are drunk?
The police have certain things they look for.
Patterns of the I guess that's how.
I mean, there's definitely some weaving behavior, but you know, I don't think we even recognize the extent to which we're distracted when we're on a cell phone conversation. When you're punching dialing the buttons, you're quite aware of the distraction.
Right.
But when you're actually in the conversation, there's sort of no way to know, and this is why it's a great problem, of course.
Yeah, and then they keep people want their video screens on their cars now to watch.
Yes, in the back seat for now, but they're probably making their way into the front seats.
Well, if you have an iPhone and you have your video playing on it, it could be sitting right there in the dashboard or any of these cell phones.
Texting while driving is definitely a part of the traffic culture, which is not a good thing.
Not a good thing. Well, we've run out of time. Tom, I want to thank you for joining us. Great book, Traffic, Why We Drive the Way We Do and What It Says About Us, written by Tom Vanderbilt, who is author for Wired and New York Times. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Greg Smith composed our theme music. It would help today from NPR librarian Kim Mileski. And if you have comments, write to us at sciencefriday.com. We're also going to bid a sorrowful farewell today to producer Karen Vergoth. Karen has been with Sci-Fry for 12 of our 18 years. She's been seen, and she's seen it, and she has done it all. And without her efforts and devotion to quality and detail, our program would not be what it is today. We're going to bid her an adieu and wish her and her family very well a good journey to Colorado. If you have questions, write to us at sciencefriday.com. And we're podcasting and web, all kinds of stuff on Science Friday. We've got video podcasts, audio podcasts, and also in Second Life. Please leave us your videos. We'd love to see if you've got some great videos you'd like to share with us. Feel free to send them on to Flora over there. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.